Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back. It's Friday afternoon, so you know the Atlanta sports guys have reconvened to talk. Let me check my notes here. Atlanta sports. Oh, yeah, it's happening tonight. Potentially the greatest night in Atlanta Hawks history. To cover all of that, the Braves winning, Charlie Morton flirting with a no-hitter, the Falcons signing all their rookies, I am joined by Max Markovich and Garrett Chapman. Max, Garrett, how are you guys?
I'm great. Huge night. Huge, huge, huge night.
It's a big night. I cannot wait for tonight.
It's going to be fun, man. Like, I'm, you know what's weird? It's like, I feel like we have been in a situation where, like, being excited is the wrong way to approach Hawks games. It's like when we're, the doom and gloom is when the Hawks rise to the challenge, is like, oh, I don't know about this. And then they love being on the road. They love being the villains. They love adversity. Trey loves adversity. This group loves adversity. And now they're the favorites going into this home game tonight, and they can lock it all down. So I wish there was more pushback of like, there's no way. Like, the Sixers are absolutely going to push this back to Philadelphia. I wish it was more of that and not, the Hawks should close this thing out. What do you think, Garrett?
Confidence in Atlanta is riding extremely high. And I think we were talking about this right beforehand. Like, I'm going to be going to the game tonight. And I just know for a fact that that place is going to be just explosive. Like, people are going to be loud and rowdy, and if social media is any indication of what the city of Atlanta is feeling, this place is, the top is about to explode. So I cannot wait for this game tonight. But the 76ers are still the number one seed. They're still the perennial favorite in this series, regardless of whether or not we have a lead or not. Because we did this in 2013 where we had the lead against the number one seed Pacers. They came into Atlanta. They took care of business. Game 6 and 7. It happens. We're human. Like, those things, it would not be unheard of if the Hawks still find a way to lose this series. But look, you tell me that on February 28th that you have Onyeka Okongwu, who's playing playoff minutes, you have Lou Williams, who's coming in clutch for this Hawks team, a guy who didn't even want to play on the Atlanta Hawks at the time. He considered retiring. That Lloyd Pierce was fired, that we persevered through all of these injuries, and half the team was hurt throughout the entire season. And you're going to tell me that we're one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals? Holy shit, man. I would take that all 7 days of the week. And now that's honestly feeling more like an expectation and a reality than anything.
Yeah, I'm still just reeling from, still just riding this high from the Wednesday night game, and just the inexplicable nature of the way the Hawks came back in that game, where it went from, oh, the bench unit is going to force Joel Embiid and friends to come back in the game and get more run. That's cool. Get them a little bit more tired for game 6 so we can hopefully force game 7. And then it just escalated from there, and the cascade of events that followed was just bonkers. And
the beauty of that is that inexplicable feeling never happens for us. It always happens to us. Like, we're always like, how did we lose that? Every Atlanta sports team, how did we lose that game? How did we lose that series? Like, we had that, like, you know, the inexplicable nature of it, it's always on us. And for once, we can't explain how the Hawks won that game. And I'm the same way. I'm still speechless from that game, and just completely riding that high. And it's really crazy to think about. When Garrett was talking, I was thinking, Lloyd Pierce was fired on beginning of March, right? It is middle of June right now. That was 3.5 months ago. At that time, we were talking about how Are we sure that Travis Schlenk is going to have a job after this year? We were talking about what an utter disaster the trade, Luka trade, is, which I don't want to talk about for even a minute on this podcast. We were talking about whether the playoff mandate, whether that was a bad idea, whether this was too early, whether we tried to do this a year early, whether this was ever going to work. And now we're 3.5 months later, and this team's just pure joy. I mean, you know, I have a hard time getting too nervous about tonight because it's like everything's house money, man. Like, this team makes the Eastern Conference Finals. That's freaking awesome. If they lose in seven to Philly, like, will I be unhappy about it? Yeah, absolutely. But am I going to look back on that and say, you know, think about this run in anything other than positive, you know, context? Absolutely not. Like, this has been so fun, beginning to end.
And one of the coolest things that I got to experience for game five, it was in a Philly bar right next to my house. Listening to the way that they celebrated when Ben Simmons hit two consecutive free throws. You would have thought Bryce Harper came up and hit a grand damn slam. I mean, my God, it's just absurd. I mean, the dude was hitting free throws, and he hit two of them, and they exploded and celebrated and were, like, in our faces and everything, because I was sitting with a small, like, little contingent of Hawks fans. And then we proceeded to foul him again, and he bricked both, and half the people in my party just got bonkers and went rowdy and crazy. I mean, just the energy that people are feeling right now. I mean, it's just
– I feel bad for him.
It's palpable.
Like, I really feel bad for him. Like,
why? He's a professional athlete.
It's an embarrassment.
He's played – like, that's what I was going to say with
Max.
It's embarrassing, dude. Like, that is an embarrassing look.
No, I don't feel bad for him at all. He's a point guard. If you're going to play point guard in the NBA, you better shoot better than 30%. Like, that's what he is shooting right now in this series. Like, that is so miserably bad. You're making $35 million to brick free throws and be a liability to your team. At least be Shaquille O'Neal. Like, if Shaquille O'Neal is going to – if you're going to do hack a Shaq, then, look, the guy's going to come in and dominate you and drop 35 points. They did that because they had to stop him. That was the only way they could.
I mean, Simmons, a very proponent of just, like, if it's that bad – as a million-dollar athlete, you should be forced to granny shot it. Like, unless you fix it yourself, then you should have to granny shot. I think
he's a max player.
Yeah,
and he's attempting 5 3-pointers a season as a point guard. You can sag off 5-10 feet when he has the basketball in his hands.
Garrett, do you buy the KOC from the Ringer argument that he is?
He's ready.
He has said forever that he's right-handed.
I don't know what he is, man. I don't know if he has a dominant hand.
Well, he grew up right-handed.
He's got two left hands. I know that.
Like, there's anecdotes when he was coming up in the draft, like, years ago now, that he grew up right-handed and his dad made him learn to shoot left. Like, that was something that they, like, forced a change on him. Like, his dominant hand growing up was right-handed.
Well, there are palpable – there are actually, like legitimate – palpable. There are very legitimate advantages to being a left-handed person. I mean, like look, when I'm – but if my kid grows up and plays sports, if they choose to do that, obviously, then I'm going to say, hey, pick it up with your left hand.
Well,
I'll encourage them to
so
be left-handed.
There's an advantage. That is the kind of comment that you make if you want to stay in the number one spot on this very podcast. So that's a good one. This is a very left-handed friendly podcast, and I appreciate you making that.
No, but there is a serious advantage to it because you're the southpaw. You're the left-handed pitcher. You're coming up from the left side when you're
a lot of us
doing anything
presidents.
Else. Look at Messi. Messi is left-footed. I mean, there is an advantage to it. I think LeBron's technically ambidextrous, but he's left-handed.
Wait, is LeBron left-handed?
Yeah, he's left-handed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so is Messi is. I mean, like, there's a huge advantage. It's a huge advantage of being left-handed.
Not when you're in grade school and you have to write with your left hand.
Oh, only in sports.
Desk. Yeah.
Yeah, it's only like Conor McGregor's also a southpaw. Like, it's very common that it's like you have a little bit more success as left-handed. But I mean, that's not the point. The point is, Ben Simmons can't hit a free throw, and the guy talks so much shit after he dunks a basketball or hits a layup, and
man,
it's like,
Garrett,
bro,
really
just
hates Ben Simmons.
I can't stand.
Well, okay,
Ben Simmons.
Okay, no,
well, it's all the slander that he's
no,
been
but
getting.
Like, Ben Simmons does not
I'm
bother me as
way.
Much as Joel Embiid diving at players' knees and Joel Embiid flopping around. I think he drives
me
more.
I respect Embiid a lot more after the series than I did before, to be honest. But I want to go off Ben Simmons a little bit more because I feel like I'm not sure if we talked about this last week, but I feel like you learn so much about different players around the league when your team plays them in a series. And my esteem for Ben Simmons has to say it plummeted is an understatement. Like, all that dude needs is an elbow jumper to become like a 60 to 70% free throw shooter and to have like one post move, and he would be all NBA. Like, how hard is that? Get in the gym and develop those three things, and you are one of the 10 to 15 best players.
Thank you. And then shoot 2 3-pointers a game. Shoot two where they can't sag off 5 to 10 feet. No, but it's like, if you can just do something for me in the half court offense that isn't passing the basketball, and you're going to be one of the best players in the NBA. I mean, look, the people compared him to LeBron James just because of his incredible passing ability and sheer athleticism and size. And the guy was a freak coming out of college. That was undeniable. The difference between him and LeBron James is that LeBron James was able to change his game with the rising trends of the NBA, which was to shoot the damn basketball. Ben Simmons just shows an utter reluctance to do that. I mean, it's just the most frustrating thing in the world to watch, because the guy is so damn talented. All those comparisons to LeBron, and dude, prove it. Add some moves.
If you're a Sixers fan, I pose this to my friend. If you're a Sixers fan and you could only have one guy for Game 6 between Seth Curry and Ben Simmons, there's no world in which you're picking Simmons.
Oh, no, I would still pick Simmons just because of the trade.
No way. How are you
still
scoring?
Want him on Trey?
Dude, I don't know. Throw a thigh ball.
I don't know, man. Matisse, like,
what are you going to play?
It's not like
five
Trey Young's not
minutes?
Averaging 30 points
yes.
a game in this series.
I actually think Thibault's been really good in this series.
He's been awful. I can pull up the numbers. I want to say his plus minus in the series has been disastrous.
Oh, but the thing is, he's when you put him on the floor, it's purely for defense.
Yeah, but the
because the guy can't
pick
score.
Up. The offense dies. Like, he is such a negative offensively and such a non-offensive player that, like, it's just been bad. Like, what did he play? 24? Yeah, he's playing about 24 minutes a night. But no. Yeah,
but look, I mean, look, I don't see how Ben Simmons offers all that much when he's been marking Trae Young, and Trae Young's still going for a 30-point double-double every night.
I mean, a lot of that's late, and I mean, Simmons is still...
Who cares? It's still happening during the game.
I mean, Simmons is still playing Trae really well. Simmons is still causing problems, especially early on in games. Like, Simmons is still playing Trae very well. He's defended Trae better than most people have defended Trae. And then Thibault is also the guy who got caught in the three-pointer at the end, the three-point foul, which was just my favorite villain moment, where I knew immediately what was happening, and the fact that he did not know what was happening until it was too late is unreal, because that's like one you can't legislate that out of the game. That's just being dumb. Like, that's literally, Dwayne Wade did that so many times throughout the course of his career, where just guys are dumb, and this was just a dumb defensive play. But I don't know. I also just think not having Danny Green was a problem for the Hawks the last two games. Like, Danny Green just not being out there bricking corner threes is just a problem, because Korkmaz was lighting it up the last two games mostly. And
he's
also got
really
no-shows from Kevin Huerter. Like, Kevin Herter's been really bad.
And Bogey.
That was a tweet.
Bogey,
no, that
yeah.
was a tweet
Bogey
that I sent
play.
Out.
In
that was a tweet
quarter.
That I sent out late in the game, or like, it was really late after the game. It was the fact that you have Clint Capella, you have Bogey Bogdanovic, and you have Kevin Huerter, who acquired, what, I think it was 14 fouls between the three of them. They had 12 points. They had more fouls than points in that game on Wednesday, and they still won the game. And all of the, I mean, if you don't have, actually, here, I'll pose this question. Does Danilo Gallinari start?
Does Gallinari start what?
Does he start tonight?
No.
No. No. Okay, because I heard that post. I heard that post just because I think the plus minus of Bogey Bogdanovic, Danilo Gallinari, and John Collins, and Clint Capella, I believe, is, I think it's like plus like 25 or something throughout the course of the series.
I can see that, yeah.
No, but that's a good segue into something I wanted to talk about, which is, I think we're not talking enough about how good of a job Nate has done in this series. And I think the reason you brought that bring up Gallinari brought that up for me, which is, he recognized, despite the vulnerability in that matchup, that these wings can't play. That Solomon Hill, Tony Snell cannot play in this series. They can't play probably in any series. But he recognized that. He put in Huerter, so he would play Trae, Bogey, and Huerter together, and then he would play two bigs. But he's also gone big with Gallo, Collins, and Capella. And we can do that because Simmons and Thibault are total zeros on the perimeter, right? So you can have those guys sit in the paint, play three bigs and two guards, and get more offense out of that. And I think Nate recognizing that has been huge, to not forcing in Solomon Hill minutes, not forcing in Tony Snell minutes, and being able to run, you know, weird lineups with either three guards or three bigs.
Not Nate McMillan's done a very good job. I mean, he deserves all the credit. I mean, not all the credit, but he deserves all, as much credit as we can possibly give him. I mean, he's like you said, like he recognized trends and he responded to them. And look, I mean, he got these guys back in this game with that halftime speech. Whatever he said, keep it behind closed doors. I don't care. Whatever he said, he got the Hawks back into the game twice in a row. I mean, double-digit deficits in both games. We find our way back in. No, I don't think any other coach does that for us right now. He has a connection with these players.
Yeah, and rolling with Trey and Lou together, which, like, I don't know how many coaches would be willing to do that with total two complete zeros.
Two games in a row. He's done that two games in a row with significant late game minutes.
Yeah.
And you saw the impact of that in game four because he goes for 13 points, 13 of his 15 in the fourth quarter.
I'm going to guess Trey said
he rolls with a hot hand.
Because I remember Trey was the one who just posited to keep Lou in the Knicks series. I'm going to guess Trey dictates a lot of these late game calls of like, no, keep him in with me. We got this. I think a lot of it is he looks at what Trey is okay with late. That would be my guess.
I could see Trey Young potentially having, like you say, hey, Trey, what do you think about this?
Yeah,
I don't think Trey dictates it.
I think he might.
But at the end of the day, like you're building this offense and team around Trey Young.
Right.
And look, Trey Young is the guy who's going to slam the door. He did mm-hmm. that. Lou Williams tossed it up, and Trey Young slammed it down on Wednesday. That's how this team is. That's how it's supposed to happen. Because Trae Young is our superstar. He has become a superstar in this playoffs. And look, I mean, Trae Young the Hawks don't get it done without either of those guys. And look, if you want to set it up in a way for Trae to best play the game of basketball, that's what I'm going to do. And if I'm Nate McMillan and Trae has an opinion, then I'll listen to him. But at the end of the day, he's the head coach, and I think he's ultimately the one that deserves the credit for those rotations and keeping people in or whatever. But he's going to do what's best for Trey and what's best because typically that's what's best for this team.
Yeah. I think the best thing about Nate is that he is just like, Trey, you're dictating everything we do now. Like whatever you're comfortable with, like he's seeking Trey's advice. He is looking at Trey like, okay, what do you see? Cause like, what was the comment he had? I forgot if it was in Kirshner's article or not about Trey just taking what the defense gives him. And Trey's just like, yeah, I know what's coming. And like Trey is calling out his own plays a lot now. I think it's just more of like, that's just where the modern game's going. You saw what just happened with Luka and Rick Carlisle in that front office. Like, that's literally how this is working now. It's just when you have the superstars, like Zion's probably going to dictate who the next coach is in New Orleans because it's coming out that his family's not happy about the direction there. I just think Nate
Damian
will stay.
Lillard, too.
If Trey is cool with it, then yeah, like, you just do whatever Trey wants. Like, that is the new normal for NBA players. If you want to keep these
young stars,
you have to do that. And I don't think Lloyd was doing that. And I think that was part of the disconnect. Is like, Trey's like, no. I am the king. I am the king now. Like, this is my ship. I'm the captain now.
And I am the captain.
Yeah, that is. So I don't think Nate is ultimately the final decision maker. I still think it's Trey, would be my guess. I could be wrong.
Well, I mean, that's the rising trend of what you're pointing out. It's just the rising trend of the NBA, like you said, Luka, Damian Lillard, all these other guys. I mean, you have Aaron Rodgers. He's one who's trying to dictate a lot of stuff. Deshaun Watson, before all those allegations came out, he was one of those guys. Julio Jones. I mean, all of these guys want to dictate who and what is done because they are recognizing that they are the star. And the star sells tickets.
And also, Trey's right. Like, Trey is just a basketball savant. And, like, I think just trusting Trey to read the defense and
to they built the team around him. Travis Schlink put his entire job security into the success of Trae Young, and if Trae Young has something to say, they're gonna listen to what he says.
Yeah,
but
like,
ultimately, I don't want to get too far
Atlanta
away
Hawk
from
of all time. Like, you've already got it. Like, this, the insecurity.
No, he's
keeps in.
Still not the best Hawk of all time.
I'm saying he's on the way.
He's on his way.
He's certainly on his way. But I don't want to take away. Don't go too far because I don't want to discredit Nate McMillan because what Nate McMillan
has done. I'm not discrediting him. I think it's a positive for him that he is.
Able to listen to his players and adapt.
Right. I think he's an adaptable coach. And I think that's the only kind of coach that works now in today's NBA is the adaptable. That's why you're seeing a lot more former players get on and like why Dame wanted Jason Kidd and why Certain coaches just they want guys who they can relate to players. Like, they just, that's who most guys want. They want guys who can relate to the actual players. And Steve,
it's
Nash,
funny,
Steve Nash is on his way to winning an NBA title in year one of coaching. Like, it's just,
that's what Steve Kerr did too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just don't, I think that's just where we're going. And if you don't empower your stars, it's just not going to work out for you 9 times out of 10. Game six, expectations tonight, guys. Like, what matchups, what rotations, what are you looking at in terms of the formula for the Hawks closing this out tonight?
Man, it's so hard to say what you expect here, right? Because it's like, all right, if the Hawks go down 15 in the first quarter, like, no one's blinking. Like, no one's going to even say a thing. I mean, it's really like, all I can wait for is how the Sixers are going to respond in the fourth quarter, one way or the other. In terms of rotations, like, it's game six. Like, both teams have sort of thrown their cards on the table. I would expect the Hawks to continue staying away from the Solomon Hill, Tony Snell wing minutes. I would like to see a little bit more on Yeka Okongwu. I know
he was good in the last game.
He's been really good. And really, really, it's quite clear to me that, like, he's going to be a player down the line. And, you know, he'll struggle with Embiid. No one's going to stop Embiid. Embiid will get his. Embiid will probably get tired in the second half again. You know, Tobias Harris will probably play a little bit better. Seth Curry will probably play a little bit worse. Bogey won't, you know, no-show again. Herter won't no-show again. It's game six. Chips are all there. Who shows up? And that's what's so beautiful is that, like, we know Trey's showing up. Like, we know he's showing up night in, night out. And even if he doesn't have his shot, he'll get 18 assists like he did in game four. Or, like, you know, he'll dictate the offense. And that's, you know, this whole series to me has been such a validation of Trey. I really expected it to be a comeback-to-earth type of series for him where the length – if you were to design a defense to stop Trey Young, it would be the Sixers' defense. You would have a super athletic, much bigger guard on him. You would have one of the best defensive centers in the league sitting in the lane so he can't get his floater off. And then you would try to pressure him from behind and pressure him in the lane and just squeeze him off. And, like, that's what, you know, they're trying to do, but he can still get his. And I think it's just a validation that Trey's going to be a superstar in this league no matter what, matchup independent for years to come. And that also he's just, like, this guy in the fourth quarter that is a killer because he's not scared of anyone. And so, man, it would be so nice if, like, he had a huge fourth quarter, closed it out to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. We were talking about this before on air. And, like, you know, tonight could be the greatest night in Hawks history. Like, I don't think that's hyperbolic to say. And so that's what I'm watching for, man. Like, that would be so sick.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, the best moment since they've come to Atlanta. I mean, if Trae Young is able to be the guy to shut them down on the home court, God, wouldn't that be something? That would be absolutely incredible. The number one thing that I'm going to be looking for tonight is I'm checking out these role players, man, because Seth Curry has been going off. He dropped 36 points in the last game. You have on the Hawks side. And then on the Hawks side, you have Kevin Herter, Bogey Bogdanovich, who accounted for 6 total points. So I'm really looking at these wing guys. Who's going to step up? Who's going to be hitting their shots, especially with the Sixers coming into enemy territory? Who's going to step up for them? Because I don't know if Seth Curry can do it for a third game in a row. Because it was just him and Joel Embiid. They were the only ones who hit shots, like, from the field in the fourth quarter. I don't expect that to ever happen again. But Tobias Harris is a guy you always have to keep an eye on. Seth Curry, you have to keep an eye on him, especially if he gets hot, because he was shooting, like, 70% from three or something gaudy. Do I think he comes out and drops 36 again? No. And that's why I think, ultimately, the Hawks will win tonight. Because Kevin Herter plays some of his best basketball at home, as does Bogey Bogdanovich. Trae Young is going to come out and dish a double-double. I expect him to go 20, 22, and 15 or something tonight. Because I think the perimeter guys are going to light it up tonight. Because the Hawks still have not had a good shooting night outside of that first half up in Philadelphia in game one. The Hawks really have not shot the basketball very well. And credit Philadelphia for doing that. And you have to give them as much credit as possible because they are very good and long on the perimeter. But if the Hawks just hit their open shots tonight, they'll win this game. But I think after the 76ers blew an 18-point lead on Sunday, or Monday rather, and then a 26-point lead on Wednesday, how does Doc Rivers get these guys ready to play? Because, yeah, your backs are completely against the wall. And Nate McMillan said it best, especially back against the Knicks, the closeout game is the most difficult game. But if the Hawks can come out and step on their throats in the first half, then honestly, you just break them. You can, and that's crazy that I'm going to be talking about the 76ers as a team that you can break. But the Hawks, if they come out and shoot the basketball at a high clip and that ball actually goes through the net, the Hawks will break the 76ers and win this game.
I don't want to make any predictions. I want to see if we get off to a bad start, how we respond. I want to see how John Collins plays. I want to see if Embiid's searching for contact early and often. I want to see if he's settling for jumpers. I want to see Seth Curry. Like, it's interesting you bring that up because I think that's inevitable. I think he's going to hit his shots because a lot of them are open. Like, every game, he just finds these open spots, and he's so good at navigating pick and rolls, and he's so good at navigating just where he is on the floor at all times, so that when Simmons or Embiid or whoever is slinging the ball around, that he's always wide open. Like, I would love to, I'm going to pull up the cleaning the glass numbers on him, but it seems like he's getting a bunch of uncontested open looks. And I think part of it's just, he's got such a quick release, but I think you have to live with Seth Curry hitting those shots, because I think Seth Curry is just going to find those.
Trey is also sagging. He's sagging off of Seth to go double Joel Embiid, or he's going to go out and do some help defense or something when somebody tries to get into the lane, which leaves him open. I'm pretty sure that's what I've been seeing, at least. But look, I mean, the guy's hitting shots. He's hitting shots. But another name that you just pulled up was John Collins. Two games, he has been lights out, like absolutely lights out. And not even that, he's been a spark plug for this team. I mean, back when the last game that we played back here in Atlanta, game four, when he started dunking on folks, that crowd just exploded. And look, he's a spark plug. I mean, like, he hasn't necessarily been dominant, but he's been pretty damn good. I think, what did he go for in that game? He went 14 points, 12 rebounds, but that wasn't the impact that he had. It was the fact that he was hustling on the offensive end, getting offensive rebounds, and he was throwing the damn basketball. He was throwing it down. And John Collins has done a good job. Is he gonna? He hasn't been our max player. I still don't think that, but he's a guy who I want to have on this team next year, if possible. I just don't know how we're going to make it work.
I would say, I would also add, I don't think Philadelphia has figured out its bench lineup at all. In a way that's like, you know, if we, you know, I sort of expect Philly to come out and play well in the first quarter. But I also just have no fear of anyone on that second unit in any way in Philly. Like, those are minutes that we can and should win even without Trey. And I think that's their biggest problem. I've been thinking the same thing as Garrett, where, you know, Philly can have the best defense in the league, and they probably do, but we have another half or full game in us where we just make our shots and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I really do feel like that could be tonight. Because, you know, good offense beats good defense in this league. It just does all the time. And if Bogey and Herter decide to combine for, you know, 10 threes tonight, like, that's just the series. It's over. We're in the Eastern Conference Finals. And that's pretty crazy. But that's what I've been thinking, really, is, like, in the back of my head, we haven't shot the ball well since the first half of game one. And that's bound to change at some point.
I'm getting hyped up just thinking about it. I can't wait for this game, man.
Well, to throw some ice.
I'm going to lose my voice. My voice is going to be gone. Oh, boy.
To throw some cold water on all of this. The Atlanta Braves.
No, we don't have to.
Do we really?
I mean, it's over. Like, this season's
over. Soul for a soul.
It's over, right? Like, we're not... Like, He had a great outing last night.
It's not over.
I mean, it's over in terms of, like, what your expectations are. It's like, there's just not enough they can do at the deadline to just catapult this team from average to World Series winner. Like, there's just not there's no avenue for that to happen, I don't think, midseason. I just think you have to reel it in and just maybe get another playoff appearance. But like, this is a crazy number from Corey McCartney, friend of the pod, who had this in the Daily Nine for TalkingChop.com, which is really good. So I'm glad he's writing again. He's a great writer and local Atlanta guy. So follow him if you have not already. But he said, quote, "The franchise hasn't been this far back in a season in which it made the postseason since 1914. And since moving to Atlanta, have never been further back than six games, which was 1993 in a playoff year." Like, things are just bad right now. The Braves are in uncharted waters at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing I'm seeing, like, Soroka might be coming back in August.
That scares me, yeah. You know,
you know, coming back potentially in August. Travis d'Arnaud is coming back potentially in August. And look, I think that if the Braves can keep their head above water, and then, because Freddie's going to turn it around. I know we've been saying it for 2 months. I've said it every single week. It's going to happen. He had a pretty good game. He had a pretty good game up against the Red Sox last time, in game two of that series. Hawks, or not the Hawks, the Braves blew it. Yeah, Hawks are on the mind, let me tell you what. But no, the Braves blew it. The bullpen's bad. Snit has mismanaged the bullpen.
Jacob Webb's coming back though, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, well,
that poor kid. Like, whenever he is announced by anything Braves related, like, the comments are always just brutal.
He hasn't exactly inspired much confidence.
No, he's got to get traded. Like, just send him somewhere else so he can get a fresh start, because it's just I don't think Braves fans are ever going to trust him, even if he starts to turn it around.
No.
I think that ships out.
I mean, it's like Luke Jackson. I mean, Luke Jackson is so much better than people give him credit for.
Yeah.
So significantly better than people give him credit for. But people love to hate on him because it was the popular thing to do for so long.
I was going to say, it's the PTSD from years ago. Like, that was like,
ooh, yeah,
because
they put him as
now?
A closer at 24 years old and he was not ready for it. The guy was not mentally or emotionally ready to be a closer. He blew games. But he's a good reliever. He's a very good relief pitcher.
Yeah. Kyle Muller, though.
Looks we'll come like back. I think if we keep our head above water, I think we can go get a bat. That stuff's still going to be emerging. I think Alex Anthopoulos was on with Dukes and Bell the other day. We're going to go get a bat. Someone is going to start falling, and someone is going to start being a seller, and we're going to go find one. We have the assets to go to get it done.
That
we've
is
been
true.
Having
they
that,
the assets.
We've been having that same conversation for how long now? I mean, like, months. Like, just the
which
same,
one? That we need a bat?
Well, not just that, but the, like, keep a head above water. You know, the division's not, you know, no one's running away with it. Although
seven
the
games
Mets
back
are,
now, yeah.
It's just starting to.
But it's like, you know, keep your head above water. We'll get a bat at the deadline, hopefully go on a run. And it's like, you know, at some point it has to all kind of happen. And it can't be everything just flips at the deadline.
Right.
It's like you're not just going to suddenly get a bat and then everyone has this jolt of confidence and, you know, performs much better. You know, one bat doesn't change everything. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, the biggest beneficiary of this Hawks run is the Braves, because they've just been underwhelming in every way. It's kind of like the opposite of this Hawks team.
And you can't even account for the Ozuna stuff. Like, he's just gone forever. Like, that was a big free agent signing. Like, that's a huge thing. That was one of their four ways they just allocated their money, per the Jeff Schultz piece in The Athletic, was like, they allocated money for him and it's backloaded, which is going to be interesting to see what happens
and
there.
When you're a team, when you're a team that's not going to go out there and spend too, it's like, that's a death knell. Like, that is a huge, huge loss that, like, is unrecoverable at the moment.
The money's not coming.
What makes it just as frustrating is that it's not even like Marcell Ozuna was having a great season before.
No, but they needed him to. Like, the hope was that he would turn around in July or August.
Yeah, that's one of the cases you could make for this team going on a run, or could have made for this team going on a run.
Yeah. And it's just a frustrating season. I mean, this has been just time and again. It's just you've seen it all year. I mean, if it's not one thing, it's another thing. Because then early in the season, we had some solid pitching, and the starting pitching was great, but we couldn't hit the freaking baseball. And then now we flipped around, and the hitting started to pick up, and now we can't stop a run. We can't stop a nosebleed.
Where's Yael Escobar when you need him?
I don't know.
Giles up to. Marcus Giles was
one of my favorite players when I was a kid. loved Marcus Giles.
My grandfather was like obsessed with Mark DeRosa. Like whenever I saw him, he would just be like, yeah, Mark DeRosa.
Rafael Furcal.
He's got to play more. Well, I love me some Rafael Furcal, but it was always funny because he was like, DeRosa should be playing more. It was just always a thing. Like he was the most undervalued Brave of all time, my grandfather's mind. It was funny. He was just always like, Mark DeRosa, what's he up? Why isn't he playing more? Never that same kind of love for Keith Lockhart, but Mark DeRosa. He was the apple of my grandfather's eye for whatever reason. Last thing, guys. The Falcons. Not a lot. They signed their rookie class, but Kwadji Allison, are you keeping up with his questions of the day on the Falcons Twitter account?
No, I'm not.
It's incredible. I highly encourage you guys to watch these. So, like, when he's running out to the Fiery Branch camp and they interview him real quick when he's running out there, this was his question. So he does a question of the day. His question of the day from a couple days ago. If you get out of the shower clean, how does a towel get dirty? And then he laughs and runs onto the field. It's delightful.
Oh, I did see one of those. I saw another one of those. Yeah, that was really good.
Oh, God. I love stupid questions like that. Like, do you think a fish knows that it's wet?
I don't think so.
Or is it only when it gets out of the water that it's wet?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know the answer to this. Matt Gonneau.
We're asking the real questions here.
We are. Because the Falcons, we're about to enter a month dead period for the Falcons.
Oh, God.
Just nothing's really going to be going on. But Matt Gonneau is expected to return after undergoing surgery, but that is a depth piece. The Falcons.
Hawks are on the mind, man. Hawks are on the mind.
I know. Gonneau out. Garrett, are you concerned about the depth on the offensive line with Gonneau going down?
Of course I am. I'm worried about the offensive line, even if he's playing. I mean, this has been a major sore spot since 2016. I mean, once we lost some, I mean, Alex Mack is not here anymore. I mean, yeah, I'm concerned. I'm definitely concerned. I mean, that's going to be one of the key things to watch for the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, because look, I mean, we just went out and got Kyle Pitts. We have we're rolling the dice with Matt Ryan again. He's coming back. Not going to be much good if you can't keep Matt Ryan off the ground. I think Arthur Smith is going to help. I mean, he was an offensive lineman. That's what he did. I mean, I think he's going to bring a good mentality for this offense. I think the offensive line will be better than it was last year, but that's also not saying too much. So we'll wait and see. I don't want to make any overarching thoughts about the Atlanta Falcons in June. That's all. Because I think the team is going to come together. I mean, we can still go make free agency acquisitions. So we have plenty of time. And all of a sudden we have this weird amount of money on the books.
Yeah, we have all this money. Like, what happened?
I don't know what happened. If something happened, I don't know. So, I don't know. But we have money now, so we can make a free agency signing.
My hot take, I don't know how hot this take is actually, but is that the offensive line is probably the position I am least concerned about going into the year. I think the offensive line will be fine. Gonneau being hurt is worrisome. I think it'll probably force Jalen Mayfield into a role he might not be ready for. But the thing is, like, if the Falcons are going to be any good, the talent on the offensive line has to come through. So if the offensive line's no good, it doesn't matter because this team's going to suck. It might suck anyway, but, like, you know, I'm totally fine with Lidstrom. I think McGarry, you know, it's sort of a make or break year for McGarry, but I'm semi-confident he can get it done. Jake Matthews is, you know, solid, steady. I'm excited that we have a competition at center. Like, I feel like one of those guys will be good enough. And, you know, you kind of just can plug into the other guard spot if you need, or Mayfield can slide into guard. I just, like, of all the Falcons' worries, it's really funny actually having this conversation after talking about the Hawks for 30 minutes, where it's like we're so amped up and this is just the biggest come down talking about the Braves and the Falcons.
I hear it in our voices right now.
It's like when the Hawks lose eventually or win the title, I just, like, want to take a hibernation for a few months and not talk about Atlanta sports for a little bit.
Hopefully they can get us to training camp. That's really it.
Yeah.
God. Yeah.
I don't know. At least the Braves. That's actually what I read an article a little while back, and it's like the point of a lot of these terrible baseball teams, like the Seattle Mariners and everything, for a lot of these sports talk stations, is to get me to football season, get me to training camp in July. after that, that's fine. Because you, the Braves should be able to do that just fine. God, I hope so.
We'll see. That's all I've got, guys. What do we think? Final answer tonight. Do the Hawks end it in six tonight? Max, what do you think?
Oh, man.
It's on the record for
team of destiny. Okay. Hawks win tonight. Hawks shoot well tonight, make a lot of threes, get out to an early lead, and hold on at the end, win.
Garrett, I feel like I know.
Pretend Ludacris is playing in the background. This is happening tonight. Atlanta is taking it home. We're playing in the Eastern Conference Finals next week. Let's get it done. Go Hawks. Hawks in six. That's it.
Okay. I'm going to say the Hawks lose tonight.
No. Yeah, that's not how we end.
I think this is going seven. I think it's going to be annoying. But do you see what I'm doing here, guys? By being the wet blanket here, I am getting us ready.
It humanizes us.
Yeah, and it also just, like, will feel a lot better if I'm wrong. Like, going into it like this, I will feel a lot better if the Hawks shoot lights out tonight. I'm like, oh, I was wrong. Okay, good.
I haven't thought we were going to win a game. Also, like, going
that's
into
the way
the
to
game,
do it, man.
Have,
the Hawks play so much
we
better
win.
When we don't believe in them at all. It's great.
Well, just know that I'm going to be playing Welcome to Atlanta on repeat for the next 4 hours.
Oh, there's better
all I'll
choices
say
than
is,
that. We have all kinds of better Atlanta.
There's
choices.
Only
like
one. There's only one person in this podcast who floated it out there as a possibility that the Hawks could win the East a few weeks ago, and
I was
laughed off the microphone.
As kudos, because it's still preposterous, and I won't.
It is not still preposterous.
It's not. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day. If the Hawks have had DeAndre Hunter.
They're the favorite.
Holy shit, man.
No, they're not. What are you talking about?
With the injuries.
The Nets down two guys?
The Nets are doing it.
James Harden.
Oh, my goodness. No.
James Harden can't even run down the basketball
court.
He had a steal yesterday. He got yesterday and just stopped. He tried to run it. It's like, nope, actually, sir. And then passed the ball off.
He had a fast break
and he couldn't run. Yeah, he played better. I mean, you leave him wide open. Of course, he's going to make a shot. He's still James Harden, but he's not James Harden.
What you need to understand is that I am drunk off of Hawks hype. Mm. Like, the hangover is going to suck if we lose the series. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
Because I am hammered off of Hawks hype.
Ben Snyder.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Kevin Keeley over here.
Join us.
It's a deep cut for Atlanta Sports Twitter.
Hey, send me an Atlanta Sports playlist for me to just get hyped off the wall.
Culture 3 just dropped this week. Like, oh, what are we doing here? Shoddy Low, just there's all kinds of great Shoddy Low classics. Like, there's.
I just want a playlist. I want a full playlist, just Atlanta Sports playlist.
I can do it. That sounds like fun.
Podcast could do that. We can do that for the people.
We could literally have the Atlanta Sports Guy playlist on Spotify and share it out.
Oh,
that's viral. Idea right there.
That's not bad. All right, well, for that guy down there, number one now, Max has moved up this week. I think Max deserves some credit for moving up and sticking to his guns on Hawks hype. So Max has moved up temporarily to the number one spot on this podcast. For that guy, number two, Garrett Chapman, you could rally if the Hawks win tonight with your presence in Phillips Arena. We'll never call it State Farm Arena. That's preposterous. Not ever going to do anything of the sort. You have
Phillips Arena sponsored by State Farm.
Yeah,
sponsored by State Farm.
I mean, does anyone call really it the Benz? I guess people do call the new stadium the Benz.
Benz.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like any of it.
I call it the Benz.
I call it Silver Dome.
Actually, guys, last question mm-hmm. I have for you guys: should I wear my white All Star Dominique Wilkins jersey? The only downside, it looks like a Philly jersey, and I got a lot of people who said, "Hey, go Sixers or whatever." Dude, this is a Dominique Wilkins jersey.
Well, that's a problem.
Or should I wear my red Trae Young?
Red.
I would say
it's
red
MLK,
Trae Young.
MLK jerseys.
It matches your hair.
That's true. Red Trae Young it is. Red Trae Young it is.
Yeah. There you go. Kevin Herter out there in the stands.
Hey, man, Kevin Herter's going to drop 20 points tonight.
No, how would you drop 20 points when you're in the stands? I don't know how that would work. Being the redhead of this podcast, I don't know how any of that would work. Anyway, have fun tonight, Garrett. Be safe.
I can't wait.
Let's hope the Hawks win. Fingers crossed.
Hawks.
Hawks at 6, baby.
Hawks at 7, but I'm okay with it. Bye.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.